panicked at the clock. Gah! We're late! Then immediately started running about, parroting discombobulated orders. Put your shoes on! Put your shoes on! In the midst of it all, I got a text from Chloe, saying she really, actually, definitely couldn't babysit on Friday night. Text represents total disaster, throwing whole Rockster date into grave peril. Rebecca is going to her in-laws, even though not married, for the weekend. Tom is in Sidge's for a birthday party. He got a suite with a 40-square-metre terrace and a chromotherapy tub for £297 plus tax. Talitha doesn't do children. Jude is on a second date, which is great. But what am I going to do? As we roared late towards Kettering, I suddenly had a genius idea. Maybe I could ask Mum to babysit. Maybe she could have Billy and Mabel at St. Oswald's house for the night. The Barnacle's Penis. Saturday, 26th of January, 2013, continued. Arrived at 12:59, to find St. Oswald's house transformed into a cross between show home event and a royal tree planting ceremony. There were red and white Thornton Gracious living flags everywhere, red balloons, glasses of white wine, and girls in stiff employee of the month type suits, holding clipboards and looking around hopefully for new people who might be fun-loving yet slightly incontinent. Ran, as directed, round the side of the house and emerged into the Italianate garden to see that the ceremony was already underway. Nick, or Phil, over a PA system, was addressing a gaggle of elderly people wearing novelty hard hats. Handed Mabel the basket of chocolate hearts we'd brought, which she immediately dropped onto the gravel. There was a moment of calm. Then, A, Billy trod on them. B, Mabel burst into bereft sobs so loud that Nick or Phil stopped his speech and everyone turned to stare. C, Billy burst into his own bereft sobs. D, Mum and Una strode furiously towards us with mad, boofed hair and wearing identical pastel Kate Middleton's mother coat dress outfits. And E, Mabel tried to pick up the chocolate hearts, but her distress and humiliation were so heart-rending that I gathered her into my arms like the Virgin Mary, realizing, too late, that several of the chocolate globs were now sandwiched between Mabel's Shirley Temple red and white ensemble and my pastel Grace Kelly-style J. Crew coat. "It doesn't matter," I whispered, as Mabel's plump little body shook with sobs. "The hearts were just for showing off. It's you that counts." Just as Mum bustled up, saying, "Oh, for heaven's sakes, let me take her." "But," I began, but it was too late. Mum's ice-blue Kate Middleton's mother coat was now smeared with chocolate, too. "Oh, my godfathers," said Mum, putting Mabel down crossly, at which Mabel burst into even louder sobs, wrapping her chocolate-smeared self round my cream trousers, as Billy started yelling, "I want to go home!" My phone pinged. Rockster. "Jonesy, I'm in the Natural History Museum. Do you know that the barnacle has the largest penis in relation to its body of any creature in the natural world?" Startled, I dropped the phone, narrowly missing Mabel's head. Mum bent to pick it up. "What's this?" she said. "This is a very peculiar message." "Nothing, nothing," I gabbled, lunging at the phone. "Just the fishmonger." In the background, the speech of Nick or Phil was reaching some kind of crescendo, climaxing with a yell of "Hard hats off!" echoed by the group of elderly residents throwing their hard hats into the air, at which Billy burst into more tears, wailing, "I wanted to do hard hat offing!" Mabel said, "Damn it!" Then Billy, furious with stress, in a way I understood only too well, turned to me and said, "This is all your fault! I'm going to kill you!" Before I knew what was happening, I too had erupted with stress, like a steam kettle, and burst out, "I'm going to kill you first." "Bridget," said Mum, apoplectically. "He started it," I retorted.
No, I didn't. You started it by being late, said Billy.
The whole thing was a total, fucked-up nightmare. But there was no reprieve. We all retreated into the ladies outside the function room to clean ourselves up, managed to sneak into the cubicle and reply to Rockster about the giant barnacle penis.
Really? Ding-dong? In what state?
Hang on. I'll just see if I can arouse the barnacle. Emerged from the ladies, chocolate stain smeared, and therefore worse, to a stress-free interlude, when Mum went off to get changed, and the children were briefly entertained by a clown making animals out of balloons. The clown was clearly bored, as Mabel and Billy were the only grandchildren under the age of 35, apart from a couple of great-grandchildren who were babies. Texted Rockster about the clown and balloon animals, at which he texted back, "Can you ask him to make me one of a barnacle with an erection?" Me. Does it have to be to scale? Tee-hee. The fantastic thing about texting is that it allows you to have an instant, intimate, emotional relationship, giving each other a running commentary on your lives, without taking up any time whatsoever, or involving meetings, or arrangements, or any of the complicated things which take place in the boring, old, non-cyber world. Apart from sex, it would be perfectly possible to have an entire relationship that is much closer and healthier than many traditional marriages, without actually meeting in person at all. Maybe this will be the way forward. Sperm will simply be donated, frozen through the dating website which originally introduced you. But then, the women will end up doing what I end up doing, trying to run crazily between one child who's done something messy and complicated in the toilet and the other who's got sandwiched between the fridge and the fridge door. Maybe the way forward is cyber children, rather like those Japanese Tamagotchi pets, which give you the illusion of parenthood for about 2 days until you get bored with them, combined with cuddly soft toys. But then the human race would die out and... Oh, another text from Rockster. I think to scale would be tricky, but I would like him to use a pink, flesh-coloured balloon. Me. Barnacles are not pink. Rockster. I think you'll find the Titan acorn barnacle, native to the west coast of America, has a vivid pink hue, but I'm sure the clown is fully aware of this.
Bridget, are you still talking to the fishmonger? My mother was now dressed in another Kate Middleton's mother coat and dress, only this time in Titan Acorn Barnacle Pink. Why don't you just go to Sainsbury's? They have a smashing fish counter there. Anyway, come on. You know Penny husband's Bosworth is married now, she gabbled, sweeping me away from the children and balloon scenario. Ashley Green, you remember Ashley? Pancreatic cancer. Wynne had hardly made her exit through the crematorium curtains before Penny was ringing Ashley's doorbell with a sausage casserole. I don't think I should leave it. They'll be fine, darling, with their balloons. Anyway, Penny was saying we really should get you together with Kenneth Garside. He's on his own, you're on your own, and... Mother! I hissed as she dragged me into the alarmingly named function room. Is this the man who kept going into everyone's bedrooms on the cruise? Well, all right, yes, darling, he is. But the point is, he's clearly got a very high sex drive, so he needs a younger woman, and mother! I burst out, just as a Rockster text pinged up on my phone. I opened it. Mum grabbed the phone. It's the fishmonger again, she glowered, showing me the message. It's 20 foot when flaccid, 40 when erect. Who is this fishmonger? Oh, look! Here's Kenneth now. Kenneth Garside, wearing grey slacks and a pink sweater, did a little dancey step towards us. And for a second, it could have been Uncle Geoffrey. Uncle Geoffrey, Una's husband, Dad's best friend, with his slacks and golfing sweaters and little dancey steps and, "How's your love life? When are we going to get you married off?" I started spiralling into grief about Dad and what he would have made of all this. Then Kenneth Garside snapped me out of it by flashing an enormous set of very white false teeth in the midst of his orange face and saying creepily,
"Hello, beautiful young lady. I'm Ken 69. That's my press age, my secret preferences, and my internet dating profile name. But maybe I won't be needing that, now I've met you."
"You," I thought, then instantly shrank at my own hypocrisy, as my mind careered into mental arithmetic, demonstrating horrifically that the age difference between me and Rockster was 4 years more than the gap between me and Kenneth Garside's press age.
"Ha, ha, ha, ha," said Mum.
"Oh, there's Pole. I'll just have a quick chat with him about the profiteroles," she said, diving off towards a man in a chef's outfit, leaving me with Kenneth Garside's dazzling false teeth, just as Una, mercifully, started banging on a wine glass with a spoon. "Ladies and gentlemen, the cruise slideshow event is about to begin."
"Can I offer you my arm?" said Kenneth,
grabbing my arm and parading me into the ballroom, where rows of ornate cream chairs with gold edges were filling up in front of a giant screen showing a picture of the cruise liner. As we sat down, Kenneth Garside said,
"What have we got on our trousers?"
and started rubbing at my knee with his handkerchief, as Una took to the platform and began. "Friends, family, this year's St. Oswald's cruise marked the high spot of an already full and fulfilling year."
"Stop it," I hissed to Kenneth Garside.
"It's all computerized now," Una continued. "So, without further ado, I'm going to talk over the Mac slideshow, and some of us can relive while others dream." The cruise ship shot morphed into a mosaic of pictures, zooming in on a photo of Mum and Una boarding the ship and waving. "Gentlemen prefer blondes," said Una into the mic, cueing the slideshow soundtrack of Marilyn Monroe and Jane Russell singing Two Little Girls from Little Rock over a shot of Mum and Una in a horrifying Gentlemen Prefer Blondes homage, lying side by side on a double bed in the cabin, looking coquettishly towards the camera, one leg each raised in the air.
"Oh, my word," said Kenneth.
Then suddenly, the soundtrack was masked by a familiar electronic tune, and the slideshow was replaced by a lurid cartoon of a dragon belching fire at a one-eyed purple wizard. Sat, frozen, realizing that this was Wizard 101. Could it possibly? Could Billy possibly have got on a computer and... Suddenly the Wizard 101 page disappeared, to be replaced by my email inbox page saying, "Welcome, Bridget," with a list of subjects, the first one from Tom entitled St. Oswald's House Cruise Event Nightmare. What was Billy doing? Excuse me, I said, panicking, making my way along the row amidst the general consternation, trying to avoid Mum's eye. Rushed out into the hallway and back to the balloon room to find Billy, oblivious, tapping furiously at a MacBook Air, which was attached to a lot of wire and Ethernet hubs on a side table.
"Billy! Wait! I've just got to finish this level! I didn't go on your email. I was just trying to retrieve my password."
"Come off that!" I rasped. I managed to forcibly get him off, close the Wizard 101 and Yahoo windows, and drag him back to the balloons, just as a man in wire glasses rushed in and up to the laptop, looking traumatized. "Has anyone touched this?" he said, eyes darting incredulously around the room. I looked at Billy's face, hoping Billy would remain silent or lie. He frowned thoughtfully, and I could see him remembering all my bloody lectures about the importance of honesty and telling the truth.
"Not now!" I wanted to yell. "It's all right to lie when Mummy needs you to."
"Yes, it was me. And I didn't mean to go on Mummy's email, but I forgot my password."
9:15 p.m. At home. In bed now. On top of the whole appalling disaster, the question still remains of what I'm going to do about babysitter on Friday. Tried suggesting Friday night to Mum, after the furore had died down, but she just looked at me coldly and said it was aquazumba. 9:30 p.m. Tried Magda, but she is going to be on a short break to Istanbul with Cosmo and Woni. I wish I could, Bridge, she said. We always had my mother for babysitting emergencies. It must be tricky having had the children older. Is it that the kids are too young for you to help her and she's too old to help you? No, I said. She's got aquazumba. I'm going to have to try. Daniel. 10:45 p.m. Called Daniel.
Who are you shagging, Jones?
No one.
I demand to know.
I'm not, it's just...
I shall punish you.
I just thought you'd like to have them to stay.
Jones, you have always been the most cataclysmically awful liar. I am wild with sexual jealousy. I feel tragic, a pasted old fool.
Daniel, don't be ridiculous. You're incredibly attractive and virile and young-looking and irresistibly sexy, and
I know, Jones, I know.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Upshot is, Daniel is coming round on Friday at 6:30 to take them to his place. To sleep with or not to sleep with. Wednesday, 30th of January, 2013. Pros of sleeping with Rockster, 12. Cons of sleeping with Rockster, 3. Percentage of time spent deciding whether or not to sleep with Rockster, preparing for possibility of sleeping with Rockster, and imagining sleeping with Rockster, compared with actual time it would probably take to sleep with Rockster, 585%. 9:30 p.m. Just call Tom.
Of course you have to sleep with him, he said. You have to lose your born-again virginity, or it'll just turn into a bigger and bigger obstacle. Talitha says he's a good chap. And besides, it's an opportunist crime. How often do you get the house to yourself? Called up Talitha to cross-check with her view.
What did I tell you about not sleeping with anyone too soon? You said not before you feel ready, not too soon, I elucidated. Then reiterated Tom's argument, adding, to give strength to my position, we've been texting for weeks. Surely it's rather like in Jane Austen's day, when they did letter writing for months and months, and then, just, like, immediately got married. Bridget, sleeping with a 29-year-old off Twitter on the second date is not rather like in Jane Austen's day.
But it was you who said she has to get laid.
Well, all right, I know. And Rockster seems a sterling chap. Just go with your gut, darling. But keep safe, keep in touch, and use a condom.
Condoms? I'm not going to sleep with him. What are you supposed to do about being naked?
You get a slip, darling. A slip? Like the zoo form. Go to La Perla. No, don't go to La Perla. The expense is eye-watering. Go to Intimissimi or La Senza and get yourself a couple of little short black silk sexy slips. I think when you were last doing this, they were called petticoats. Or maybe one black, one white. With a slip, you can show off your arms and legs and décolletage, which are always the last to go, but keep the central area, which we might want to gloss over. Glossed over. Okay. Thursday, 31st of January, 2013. 10 a.m. Just logged onto email. Sender, Brian Katzenberg. Subject, your screenplay. 10:01 a.m. Yay! Screenplay has been accepted! 10:02 a.m. Oh. Sender, Brian Katzenberg. Subject, your screenplay. We have a couple of responses on your script. They are passing. The themes are fascinating, but they're wanting more of a rom-com feel. I'll keep trying. 10:05 a.m. sent fraudulently cheery email back, saying, "Thanks, Brian. Fingers crossed. But now I'm slumped in despair. I'm failure a screenwriter. I'm going to go shopping for underwear." Noon. Just back from purchasing slip, though I'm not going to sleep with Rockster, obviously. 2 p.m. Just back from leg and bikini wax, though I'm not going to sleep with him, obviously. At the beauty salon, Chardonnay said I should have a Brazilian, because that is what the young men expect these days, and suggested I buy a course of laser treatments. "But," I said, "what if Brazilians go out of fashion, and the thing is to have a fulsome giant bush like French people again?" At this, Chardonnay revealed that she had had the whole thing lasered, so she was like a baby girl. But, as she says, she worries now, what if she sleeps with someone who doesn't like the full Brazilian? And admitted that she had toyed with the idea of putting that potion onto it that makes bald men's hair grow back. 3:15 p.m. In total agony. Opted for a sort of modified Brazilian known as landing strip. Is no possibility of ever having sex with anyone after this, which is fine, as I'm not going to sleep with him anyway, obviously. Friday, 1st of February, 2013, 9:30 a.m. Leaped furtively into Boots after school drop-off to purchase condoms, since could not do it with children in tow. Though, on other hand, presence of children might have suggested condom purchase was a sign of responsible attitude to world overpopulation rather than loose behaviour. Was just standing at till when had a sense of someone glancing at basket. Looked up to see Mr. Wallacker at the next till, now staring implacably ahead, though he had obviously seen the condoms, because of the slight twitch at the corner of his mouth. Completely brazened it out by also looking straight ahead and saying, "Terrible weather for the rugby match today, isn't it?" "Oh, I don't know. It's sometimes rather enjoyable in the mud," he said, picking up his Boots bag with a tiny snort of amusement. "Enjoy your weekend." Humph. Bloody Mr. Wallacker. Anyway, what was he bloody well doing in the chemist at 9:30 on a weekday morning? Shouldn't he be at school, organising one of his military uprisings? He was probably buying condoms as well. Coloured condoms. On the way home, started to panic about leaving the kids with Daniel, and called him up. "Jones, Jones, 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 Jones! Whatever can you be suggesting? The darlings will be meticulously cared for, almost to the point of overindulgence. I shall take them," he said grandly, "to the cinema." "What movie?" I said nervously.
"Zero Dark Thirty."
"What?" That was what we human people laughingly call a joke, Jones. I have tickets to Wreck-It Ralph. At least I shall shortly have tickets to Wreck-It Ralph, now that you have reminded me about the whole splendid occasion. And then I shall take them to a fine eating establishment, such as McDonald's Restaurant. And then I shall read them children's classics until they fall purringly to sleep. And if you send the hairbrush, I will use it to spank them if they misbehave. So, anyway. Who are you shagging? Just then, the text pinged. Rockster. Do you fancy seeing a movie tonight? How about Les Miserables? Movie? I tailspinned. Doesn't he know I'm doing all this incredibly complicated hoop jumping through just so that we can sleep together? Slips and bikini waxes and condoms and Daniel and thinking about packing. Reminding self of dating rules, I took some calming breaths and texted back, "That sounds great. Is it a romantic comedy?" "Are you thinking of Les Mr. Arbres, the famous Anglo-French erotic tree-hugging romp?" And texting continued with an increasingly risque tone. 5 p.m. Massive packing up preparations for Daniel's sleepover included saliva, various bunnies, Horsio, Mario, Puffles 1, 2 and 3, Sylvanian bunnies, pyjamas, toothbrushes and toothpaste, crayons and colouring puzzle books, full box of DVDs in case Daniel ran out of things to do, suitable books to avoid bedtime story from Penthouse Forum, emergency phone number list, full first aid kit and manual, and crucially, hairbrush. Daniel turned up in a Mercedes with the top down. Had to fight urge to ask him to put the top up. Isn't it surely unsafe to drive children round with the top down? What if a great big plank fell off the back of a lorry onto them, or they went under a motorway bridge and someone dropped a block of concrete on them? "Shall we put the top up?" Daniel said to Billy, reading my face as Billy protested, "No!" "Just move these," Daniel said, smoothly picking up some magazines from the front seat, the top one bearing a large caption over a very odd photo saying, "Latin Lesbian Car Wash."
"Have to learn sometime," he said cheerfully,
climbing into the car and sitting Billy in the front seat.
"Okay. I'll press the brake and you do the buttons."
The children, anxious, freaking out mother completely forgotten, squealed with excitement as the roof started closing, until Mabel suddenly looked worried and said, "Uncle Daniel, you've forgotten to strap us in." Once I managed to persuade Daniel to put Billy in the back seat, and they were all strapped in, I waved as the three of them zoomed off without a backward glance. And then the house was empty. I cleared all the soft toys and plastic dinosaurs and embarrassing self-help books out of my bedroom, then started on de-childing the living room, but gave up as too monumental a task, and also, I'm not going to sleep with him anyway. Then I ran a hot bath and put sweet-smelling potions in and music on, reminding self that the most important thing was to A, be in a calm yet sexual mood, which wasn't a problem, and B, turn up in the right place at the right time. Second date with Toy Boy. Friday, 1st of February, 2013. Continued. I have literally no idea what goes on in Les Miserables, and really must watch it again sometime. I hear it's terribly good. All I could think about was how horny I felt with Rockster's knee so close to mine. His hand was on his left thigh, and I kept my hand on my right thigh, so that it would only have been a matter of inches for his hand to touch mine. It was incredibly arousing, wondering if he was feeling as aroused as me, but not being quite certain. Suddenly, after quite a long time, Rockster reached across and casually put his hand on my right thigh, his thumb moving the silk of the navy blue dress across my bare leg. It was a highly effective move, and not one which was, I thought, open to misinterpretation. As people continued to throw themselves into weirs and die of bad haircuts to song on the big screen, I glanced across at Rockster. He was looking calmly at the screen, only a slight flicker in his eyes, betraying the fact that anything but operatic misery watching was going on. Then he leaned across and whispered, "Shall we go?" Once outside, we started kissing frantically, then pulled ourselves together and decided we should at least go to a restaurant. The magic of Rockster was that even in the din of a succession of insanely noisy Soho restaurants with no free tables, he was such fun to talk to. Eventually, after many drinks and much talking and laughing, we ended up in the restaurant he had booked in the first place for after the movie. During the meal, he took hold of my hand and slid his thumb between my fingers. I, in turn, wrapped my fingers around his thumb and stroked it up and down in a manner which just stopped on the right side of the line of being an advertisement for a hand job. Throughout, neither of us gave any hint in our conversation that we were anything other than the jolliest of chums. It was wildly sexy. Went to the loos as we left and called Talitha. "If it feels right, darling, go for it. Any red flags, call me. I'm on the end of the phone." When we got outside, Soho again. But Friday night this time, so seriously, no taxis. He said, "How are you going to get home? The tubes have stopped." I reeled. After all the preparation and the thumb-stroking and calling friends, we actually were just jolly friends. This was terrible.
"Jonesy," he grinned, "have you ever been on a night bus? I think I'm going to have to see you home."
On the night bus, I felt as though parts of other people were going into parts of me I didn't even know existed. I felt like I was being more intimate with members of the night bus community than I'd ever been with anyone in my whole life. Rockster, however, looked worried, like the night bus was his fault.
"Okay,"
he mouthed.
I nodded cheerfully, wishing I was squeezed up against Rockster instead of the weird woman with whom I was practically having the sort of lesbian car wash sex explored in Daniel's magazine.
The bus stopped, and people started getting off. Rockster muscled through to an empty seat and sat down, in a way which seemed uncharacteristically ungallant. Then, when everyone had settled down, he got up and installed me in his place. I smiled up at him, proud at how handsome and beefy he was, but saw him looking down with a horrified expression. A woman was silently retching onto my boot. Rockster was now trying to control his laughter. It was our stop, and as we got off, he put his arm round me. "A night without vomit is a night without Jonesy," he said. "Hang on." He strode into the late-night supermarket and reappeared with a bottle of Evian, a newspaper, and a handful of paper napkins.
"I'm going to have to start carrying these with me."
"Stand still." He poured the water over my boot and knelt down and wiped off the sick. It was terribly romantic.
"Now I smell of sick," he said ruefully.
"We can wash it off at home," I said, heart leaping that there was a reason for him to come in, even if it was vomit. As we got close to the house, I could see him looking all around, trying to place where we were and what sort of place I lived in. I was so nervous when we got to the door. My hands were shaking as I put the key in the lock and couldn't get it to open.
"Let me do it," he said.
"Come in," I said, in an absurdly formal voice, as if I was a 1970s cocktail hostess.
"Shall I go somewhere till the babysitter goes?"
he whispered.
"They're not here," I whispered back. "You have two babysitters, and yet you've left the children alone?"
"No," I giggled. "They're with their godparents," I added, changing Daniel into godparents, in case Rockster somehow sensed that Daniel is a sexually available man, at least until you get to know him.
"So we've got the house to ourselves," Rockster boomed. "Can I go and wash the sick off?"
I showed him to the loo halfway up the stairs, then rushed down to the kitchen basement, brushed my hair, and put more blusher on, dimming the lights, realizing, as I did, that Rockster had never actually seen me in daylight. Suddenly had vision of self as one of those older women who insist on spending their entire time indoors with the curtains drawn, lit only by firelight or candlelight, then completely miss their mouth with the lipstick whenever anyone comes round. Then I had a terrible moment of guilt and panic about Mark. I felt like I was being unfaithful, like I was about to step off a cliff, and like I was far, far away from everything that I knew and everything that was safe. I leaned over the sink, feeling as though I was going to be, well, fittingly, I suppose, sick. Then suddenly, I heard Rockster bursting out laughing. I turned.
Oh, shit. He was looking at Chloe's chart.
Chloe had decided that Billy and Mabel would be far better in the mornings if they had a structure, and so had drawn up a chart of what is supposed to happen, more or less moment by moment, when she takes them to school. This was absolutely fine, except it was ridiculously large, and one of the entries, which Rockster was now reading out, said, 7:55 a.m. to 8 a.m, hugs and kisses with Mummy.
"Do you even know their names?" he said.
Then seeing my face, he laughed, and held his hand out for me to smell. "They're perfect," I said. "Vomit-free." Would you like a glass of... But Rockster was already kissing me. He wasn't rushing at it. He was gentle, almost tender, but in control.
Shall we go upstairs? He whispered. I want hugs and kisses with Mummy.
I started off being nervous, wondering if my bum looked fat from behind and below, but realized Rockster was focused instead on turning the lights off as we went.
Tsk, tsk. What about the National Grid, Jonesy?
Oh, the young people and their concern for the planet. When I opened the door to the room looked beautiful, just lit by the light from the landing, and Rockster at least didn't turn that one off. He stepped inside, pushing the door half-closed behind him. He took off his shirt. I gasped. He looked like an advert. He looked like he'd been airbrushed with a six-pack. There was no one in the house. The lights were low. He was good. He was safe. He was gorgeous beyond belief. Then he said, "Come here, baby."
Deflowered. Saturday, 2nd of February, 2013. 11:40 a.m. Rockster has just left, because the kids are due back in 20 minutes with Daniel. Could not resist putting on Dinah Washington's Mad About the Boy and dancing moonily around the kitchen. I feel so happy and fantastic, and as though nothing is a problem anymore. I keep wandering around, picking things up and putting them down again in a daze. It is as if I have been bathed in something like sunshine or milk. Well, not milk. Moments from last night keep coming back to me. Rockster lying back on the bed, looking at me as I walked out of the bathroom in my slip. Removing the slip. Saying I looked better without the slip. Me watching Rockster's beautiful face above me, lost in what we were doing, the slight gap between his front teeth. Then, suddenly, the very adult shockwave of the thrust, the unexpected shock and thrill after so, so long of feeling the fullness of him inside me, a moment's pause to savour it, then starting to move and remembering the ecstasy two bodies can create together. It's just amazing what bodies can do. And then, when I came, far too soon, Rockster watching my face with a horny, disbelieving expression, then feeling him starting to shake with laughter.
What?
I said. I was just wondering how long this was going to go on for.
Rockster, getting hold of my feet under the duvet, and suddenly pulling me right down to the bottom of the bed and bursting out laughing, and then starting again at the bottom of the bed. Me trying to pretend not to be having an orgasm in case he started laughing at me again. Then finally, hours and hours later, stroking his thick dark hair as he briefly rested on the pillow, taking in every detail of his perfect features, the fine lines, the brow, the nose, the jawline, the lips. Oh, God, the fun, the closeness, the ecstasy of being touched after so long by someone so beautiful, so young, and so good at it. Resting my head on his chest and talking in the darkness, and then Rockster taking my upper lip and lower lip and holding them together saying, "Shh," and me trying to say through his fingers,
"I don't want to stop talking."
And Rockster whispering kindly, like I was a child or a lunatic,
"It's not stopping talking. It's more like saving up talking. Till the morning."
And then, oh shit. Doorbell. I opened the door, beaming. The kids look wild, mad-haired, dirty-faced, but happy. Daniel took one look at me and said,
Jones. It must have been a very good night indeed. You look 25 years younger. Will you jiggle on my knee and just quickly run through the details of the whole thing carefully and precisely while they watch SpongeBob SquarePants? Sunday, 3rd of February, 2013. 9:15 p.m. Has been a wonderful rest of weekend. The kids were happy because I was happy. We went out and climbed trees, and then came back and watched Britain's Got Talent. Rockster texted at 2 p.m. and said it had been wonderful, apart from the sick he'd found on the sleeve of his jacket. I said it had been wonderful, apart from the mess he'd made on the sheets. And we both agreed our mental ages were very low and have been demonstrating it in text form ever since. I am so lucky, at this time of my life, to have had that one night with someone so young and gorgeous. I'm so grateful. 9:30 p.m. Oh, God. Suddenly, for some reason, reminded of a line in the movie The Last King of Scotland, where someone says, "I prefer sleeping with married women. They're so grateful." Think it was Idi Amin. Back in the present moment. Dark night of the soul. Saturday, 20th of April, 2013. Texts from Rockster, 0. Number of times checked for texts from Rockster, 4,567. Nits found on Billy, 6. Nits found on Mabel, 0. Nits found on me, 0. Minutes spent thinking back about Mark, loss, sadness, death, life without Mark, trying to be a woman again, leather jacket man, dating disasters, child rearing, and the whole of last year, 395. Thoughts prepared for Monday screenplay meeting with Greenlight Productions, 0. Minutes of sleep, 0. 5 a.m. But it wasn't only the one night. Rockster and I just hit it off, and a week turned into 2 weeks and 6 weeks, and now it has been 11 weeks and one day. The thing is, although in theory it was practically difficult with Rockster, it has also been surprisingly easy. Practically it was tricky, because Rockster lives with 3 other boys the same age, so obviously we couldn't really go back there, with me plunged into some Beavis and Butthead-type situation, trying to deal with crispy sheets and sinkfuls of washing up, whilst pretending to be a family friend of Rockster's mother, who had come to stay with him, in his bed, in his crispy sheets. Equally, I didn't want to introduce the kids to Rockster so soon, and certainly didn't want them to find me in bed with him. But thanks to the hook on the bedroom door, we found our way. And it was so lovely. It has been so lovely. So lovely having a separate adult life, and meeting in pubs and little restaurants, and going to movies, and for walks on the heath, and having fantastic sex, and someone who cares about me. Although he hasn't met the kids, they've become part of our dialogue, and part of the texting that is the running commentary on both our lives, what we're doing, what we're eating, what time I've got them to school, what Rockster's boss has done now, and more about what Rockster's eating. Looking back, I think I've been almost delirious, permanently shag-drunk in a haze of happiness. And now it is 5 on Saturday morning. I have been awake all night thinking about all these things. The kids will be up in an hour. I've got the film meeting on Monday and have done no preparation. I probably have nits, and there is still no text from Rockster. 10 p.m. Still no text. I'm melting down again. Have left messages and texts for Jude, Tom and Talitha, but nobody seems to be there. Jude is on her date with Plenty of Dance, or perhaps Plenty of Doctor Man, while simultaneously standing Vile Richard up with an imaginary girl. Oh, telephone. Was Talitha, coming to the rescue, refusing to listen to my wails of, "It's because I'm middle-aged," she said, "Nonsense, darling." Reminding me how, in Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, it says men of any age need to retreat to their caves sometimes. "And also, darling," she added, "you did see him on Thursday night. You can't expect to have the poor boy every other day." Then,
Just as I got into bed, the phone pinged. Leaped at it, hopefully. Was Talitha again.
Now stop worrying. It's just relationship weather. Remember everything you've learned. You are an expert dating sailor, and I promise you, you will successfully navigate this little squall.
Sunday, 21st of April, 2013. £136. Oh, no, this has to stop. Calories, 2,850. Ditto, but is Roxter's fault. Minutes spent playing with children, 452. Minutes spent worrying about Roxter while playing with children, 452. Hope social services not reading. 3 p.m. Still no sex, I mean text. But feeling much more composed about Roxter today. Calm, Buddhist, almost Dalai Lama-like. When he comes, we welcome. When he goes, we let him go. 3:05 p.m. Fuck Roxter. Fuck him. Suddenly doing death by texting after all that closeness. It's inhuman. I didn't like him anyway. I was just using him for sex, like a toy boy. And it's a really good job the children didn't meet him, because now it is all over, so at least it won't affect them. But where am I going to find someone I just get on with like that, who is so funny and sweet and gorgeous and... Mummy, Billy interrupted. How many elements are there? 4, I said brightly, snapping back into the reality of the messy Sunday afternoon in the kitchen. Air, fire and wood and,
Not wood. Wood isn't an element.
Oh. Suddenly realised wood came from a book I read about elemental design when I had the fantasy of redoing the house into a Buddhist zendo. And it said the house had to have water, wood, earth and fire. Well, no problem with the last one anyway.
There are 5 elements.
No, there aren't, I said indignantly. There are 4 elements.
No, there are 5 elements, said Billy. Air, earth, water, fire, and technology. 5.
Technology isn't an element.
Yes, it is.
No, it isn't.
It is. It's in We Skylanders. Air, earth, water, fire, and technology.
Stared at him in horror. Has technology become another element now? Is that it? Technology is the 5th element, and my generation just don't understand it. Like the Incas, just completely forgetting to invent the wheel. Or maybe the Incas invented the wheel, and it was the Aztecs to whom the idea of the wheel just never occurred. Billy, I said, who invented the wheel? Was it the Incas or the Aztecs?
Mummy, it was in Asia in 8000 BC, Billy said, without looking up.
He had somehow got onto his iPod without me noticing.
What are you doing? I burst out. You've had your time. Your next time isn't till 4 o'clock. But I wasn't doing Skylanders for the whole 45 minutes. I was only playing for 37 minutes because it was loading, and you said you would save my time when I went to the toilet.
I grasped my hair and pulled it, trying not to think about the knit eggs. I just don't know what to do about technology. It's banned in the week, and at the weekend... It's maximum 2.5 hours, with no more than 45 minutes at a time, and at least an hour in between. But the whole thing gets like a complicated algorithm of finishing levels, and loading, and going to the toilet, and playing cyber wizards with someone across the road. And it just drives me mad, because it turns them into non-present creatures, and I might as well still be in bed as... Billy, I said, in my best voicemail voice. You have had your screen time... Would you please hand me the iPad? I mean iPod.
It's not an iPod.
Hand it over, I said, staring Medusa-like at the evil, thin, black object.
It's a Kindle.
I said enough screens.
Mummy, it's your Kindle. It's a book.
I blinked rapidly, confused. It was technological, and black, and thin, and therefore evil. But
I'm reading James and the Giant Peach by Roald Dahl.
It was also a book.
Well,
I said brightly, trying to recover my dignity. Anyone want a snack?
Mummy, said Billy, you're so silly. Okay. I'm sorry, I said, like a sulky teenager. I got hold of him and hugged him, perhaps a little too passionately. Suddenly, there was a ping, lunged at the phone. Rockster! It was Rockster.
Jonesy, I'm so sorry I've been out of touch. I left my phone on the kitchen table when I went to Cardiff on Friday, and I don't have your number anywhere else. I've been tweeting and emailing you like a frenzied beast. Have the ants got into your computer?
Oh, God, that's right. Rockster had said he was going to Cardiff to watch the rugby this weekend. That was why he wanted to see me on Thursday when I found out Billy had nits. The Cardiff rugby thing was this weekend. Had delicious texting exchange culminating in,
shall I come round tonight to have make-up sex? Even though we didn't actually have break-up sex. But maybe we could do that after.
I'm going to say no. Have meeting tomorrow, and is really important to be prepared, rested, and fresh. And that is the sort of professional, prioritizing power mother I am. After the children are asleep, I shall prepare my thoughts for the power meeting. 11:55 p.m. There is nothing like make-up sex to help you forgive your toy boy for going to watch the rugby and leaving his phone behind.
Power Mother. Monday, 22nd of April, 2013. £132 evaporated through sex. Shags, 5. Minutes spent preparing thoughts for meeting, 0. Ideas of things to say in meeting, 0. Oh, God. 11:30 a.m. Film company reception area. Oh, God. What was I thinking having sex all night? The whole make-up, break-up thing somehow whipped Rockster and me up into a sexual frenzy, and neither of us could stay asleep. Was just actually hanging upside down from the side of the bed, with Rockster holding both my legs in the air whilst thrusting in between them, when suddenly, Mummy! The door handle started rattling. Oh, God, it was so difficult to stop. Mummy! Rockster pulled back in alarm, so that I crashed down backwards onto the floor. Mummy? What was that bang? Nothing, darling, I trilled, upside down. Coming! At which Rockster whispered,
and I'm certainly about to.
I tried to turn myself round, unladylikely, with my bum in the air, and Rockster started giggling as he hoisted me back up onto the bed, whispering,
please don't fart.
Mummy, where are you? Why is the door locked?
I dived over the bed, trying to straighten my slip, while Rockster hid over the other side. I undid the hook, opened the door a crack, and hurriedly stepped out, shutting it behind me.
It's all right, Billy. Mummy's here. Everything's fine. What's the matter?
Mummy, said Billy, looking at me strangely. Why are your boobies hanging out?
Once I'd taken them to school, the morning was complete nightmare, trying to sort out complex matrix of pickups and nits and playdate dilemmas with Chloe, blow-drying hair, presumably spraying bathroom with early cycle knit eggs, and eventually locating navy silk dress in bottom of wardrobe, requiring ironing and wiping off of chocolate stain. And now I am here waiting for the film meeting and have not done any mental preparation at all. Offices are incredibly scary. Reception area is like an art gallery. Reception desk is like an enormous concrete freestanding bath. And there is a man lying face down on the floor. Perhaps another aspiring screenwriter whose exploratory option meeting had failed? 12:05 p.m. Oh, is a sculpture, or perhaps more of an installation. 12:07 p.m. Calm and poised. Calm and poised. Everything is fine. Just need to remind self of what is actually in script. 12:10 p.m. Maybe we'll win BAFTA Award for Best Adapted Screenplay. I would like to thank Talitha, Sergei, Billy, Mabel, Rockster. Anyway, enough about them. I was born 35 years ago, and... 12:12 p.m. Look, stop it. Must marshal thoughts. The important thing is that this updating is a feminist tragedy,
The key narrative thread is that Hedda, instead of just being independent like Jude, settles for a dull, unattractive academic who stretches his budget to buy them a house in Queen's Park. Then, disappointed by the intellectual honeymoon in Florence because she really wants to go to Ibiza, and disappointed by the rubbish sex because she really wanted to marry her hot alcoholic lover, she comes back to find self also disappointed by the dingy rainy house in Queen's Park and eventually ends up shooting herself and... 5 p.m. Was startled from reverie by a tall girl with dark hair dressed entirely in black. A shorter youth stood behind her, with hair cut short at one side and long at the other. They smiled over brightly, as if I'd already done something wrong, and they were trying to smooth me over before they killed me and left me like the man on the floor. "Hi, I'm Imogen, and this is Damien." There was a moment of awkward silence as we squashed into the stainless steel lift, looking at each other through maniacal grins, wondering what to say. "It's a very nice lift," I burst out, at which Imogen said, "Yes, isn't it?" And the doors opened directly into a spectacular boardroom, looking out over the rooftops of London. "Something to drink," said Imogen, pointing to a low sideboard, sporting an array of designer waters, Diet Cokes, coffee, chocolate biscuits, Nutribars, oatmeal biscuits, a bowl of fruit and chocolate celebrations, and, oddly for that time of day, croissants. Just as I was helping myself to coffee and a croissant, to create a pleasing air of a power breakfast, the door burst open, and a tall, imposing man in large black glasses and immaculately ironed shirt swept in, looking very busy and important.
"Sorry," he said, in a deep voice, without looking at anyone. "Conference call. Okay, where are we?"
"Bridget, this is George, the head of Greenlight Productions," said Imogen, just as my handbag started making a loud cracking noise. Oh, God, Billy had obviously done something with the text alert. "Sorry," I laughed gaily. "I'll turn that off." And started grappling amongst the bits of cheese in my bag to try and find the phone. The thing is, though, the cracking wasn't a text alert. It was some sort of alarm, so it kept on going, and my bag was so full of rubbish I couldn't find the phone. Everyone stared.
"So,"
said George, gesturing at the chair beside him, as I managed to pull out the phone, wipe off a bit of squashed banana, and turn it off.
"So, we like your script."
"Oh, that's great," I said, furtively placing the phone on vibrate and on my knee in case Chloe or the school texted. "There are some really lovely things in there," said Imogen. "Thank you," I beamed. "I've made some notes for our discussion and..." The phone vibrated. Was Chloe. "Cosmata's mom says fine to bring Mabel to playdate, as Cosmata and Thelonious have nits too. But Atticus's mom said no to nits for Billy playdate. Also, Billy has been sick at school, and they want someone to get him now. But I can't, and Cosmata's mum doesn't want sick germs in her house, so can't take Billy to pick up Mabel from Cosmata's." Mind reeled over Latin verb declension like morass of children's names. Cosmo, Cosmas, Cosmata, Theo, Thea, Thelonious, Atticase, and hideous pick-up sick dilemma, wondering what power mothers did in similar situations. "Basically, we think the whole tone and the updating of the header story is great," Imogen was saying.
"The Hedda character,"
added George tersely. Imogen coloured slightly, seeming to take this as some kind of rebuke, then continued, "We think the idea of a woman dissatisfied with her lot and torn between a sensible choice husband and a wildly creative..." "Exactly, exactly," I said, as the phone vibrated again. "I mean, even though it was a long time ago, women are still making these decisions. I think Queen's Park has exactly the sort of..." Glanced furtively at the text. "Rockstar.
What are you wearing? And how is the film meeting?" "Right, right. What we're thinking is..." "We said it in Hawaii," George interrupted.
"Hawaii?" I said.
"Yes."
Realizing this might be a crucial juncture, I gathered my courage and added, "Although it is meant to be more Norwegian, So, like in November, all dark and miserable in a dark, depressing house in Queen's Park?
It could be Kauai, said Imogen, encouragingly. It rains all the time there.
So, instead of being in, like, a dark, depressing house, it's
on a yacht, said Imogen. We want to bring in a sort of 60s, 70s glamorous feel.
Like the Pink Panther,
interjected Damien. You mean it's going to be a cartoon? I said, furtively texting navy silk dress, nightmare, under the desk.
No, no, you know, like the original Pink Panther with David Niven and Peter Sellers, said Imogen.
Wasn't that set in Paris and Gestat?
Well, yes, but it's the feel we're after, the mood, said Imogen.
A yacht in Hawaii with a Paris Gestat sort of feel, I said.
Where it's raining, said Imogen.
Dark, dark, cloudy skies, added Damien.
I slumped. The whole thing was meant to be about everything being disappointing and shabby. But, importantly, as Brian the agent says, if you're a screenwriter, you don't want to be sort of a nuisance. The phone vibrated. Rockstar.
GBH, kiss. Is that the navy silk dress I had my head up last week?
So, said George. Header is Kate Hudson.
Right. Right, I nodded, writing Kate Hudson in my iPhone notes and quickly texting GBH, question mark, while trying not to think about Rockstar's head up my dress.
The boring husband is Leonardo DiCaprio, and then the alcoholic ex is
Heath Ledger, Damien said quickly.
But he's dead, said Imogen, just as Rockstar texted
great big hamburger, I mean, hug.
Yeah,
Damien was saying.
Not, Heath Ledger, but someone like Heath Ledger, only...
Not dead, said Imogen, staring at Damien coldly. Colin Farrell?